Well, it's a great pleasure to introduce our third speaker, Lillian Wild, and thank you very much for getting here, Lillian.
I'm so sorry if the plane was 50 minutes late. We were circling over London, which was beautiful, but very unhandy.
So Lillian's going to talk to us on the topic of the minimal self in the face of trauma, political applications of phenomenological theory. Lillian, I'm going to hold these up for you, so maybe I'll sit there. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, in my I just completed my master's degree at the University of Copenhagen, and in my research I pursued the question of whether the minimal self remains constant even in severe psychopathologies, or whether it is impacted. No. Maybe I can just stand.
I can move through them for you.
I will look at you whenever I move. Thank you. So I will begin with a focus on the phenomenology of trauma in the first part of the presentation. Patients suffering from PTSD after having been exposed to severe and extreme traumatic events, they often experience significant changes in their experience and in their perception of themselves. And some researchers have argued that these alterations of perception involve a shattering or a loss of even minimal selfhood. And I'm going to challenge this assumption. I think that their arguments presuppose a too rich construal of the notion of minimal selfhood. So in the second part of the presentation, I'm going to present Dan Zahavi's notion of minimal selfhood. So he uses a very thin account of the term. And it is this notion of selfhood that is the least likely to be impacted in trauma. That's why I focused on that. And yet, although it is so thin, it is often said to be lost or shattered. I'm going to argue that the minimal self, understood as the basic subjectivity of experience, remains constant, even in severe psychopathologies. In the third part, I'm going to speak about a multidimensional approach to selfhood. Because even if the minimal self is not threatened, that doesn't make pathologies of other dimensions of selfhood less severe. I will therefore offer my own alternative interpretation of what is at stake in trauma. I will begin with a short introduction into trauma and PTSD. So trauma is, according to the American Psychiatric Association, traumatic events usually involve fundamental threats to life or bodily integrity. These events can have, as I said, a significant impact on the individual and their experience. Repeated or prolonged traumatic events can lead to what is called CPTSD or complex PTSD. And this is just a very short selection of symptoms of both PTSD and CPTSD that are significant for this presentation. So this list is not conclusive at all. So intrusive thoughts, flashbacks and nightmares, disturbances in relational capacities, as well as dissociation, can be effects of traumatic events. And especially the latter is why some authors propose that the minimal self is lost or shattered. Sass and Pinkos, for example, write, "The extreme loss of minimal self seems to be a key aspect of disturbed experience of thoughts and cognition." Or the example case of Gall, who is said to cancel the minimal sense of self that is responsible for the subjective feeling. Gall is a patient who suffers from severe CPTSD after having experienced ongoing childhood abuse. And amongst her symptoms is the experience of alter identities, of thought insertion and dissociation, amongst other stress disorders. Her case study serves as an example for a pathology of the self and for the treatment thereof in the literature. When Gal enters a state of crisis, what she calls her feeling of madness, she loses the distinction between herself and her alter identities. So as a consequence, she no longer knows who she is. And she doesn't identify either with the alters or herself anymore. And this is a statement that illustrates her state of mind. There's usually one figure out there, unified, dominant, and the small ones wander. Now they're all your friends. They are at your level. They all got taller and stronger. This is part of my feeling of madness. Part of this is that you don't know who you are, where you are, what you are, and you have no unification. Yochai Ataria, who worked with Gal and interviewed her, claims that for patients like Gal, I quote, the very quality of perception is fundamentally altered. The sense of mindness eventually collapses, and the individual loses the ability to perceive the world from a first-person perspective. He writes further, if the first-person givenness collapses, the very structure of subjectivity also falls apart. End quote. He subsequently claims that the minimal self shatters. I want to argue that he is not clear in his terminology at this point. He quotes Dan Zahavi, but at the same time adopts a more robust notion of the term of minimal selfhood. And I will come to the second part of the presentation in which I'm going to elaborate further on the concept of the minimal self. Zahavi writes, the minimal self is the very subjectivity of experience. So throughout the constant changes of experience, there is a ubiquitously present subjectivity that is experiencing them prior to any reflection, as we just heard in your presentation. So in other words, every experience is necessary for a subject or a subjectivity, and this subjectivity, on Zahavi's account, amounts to minimal selfhood. So this ubiquitous first-personal givenness or for-me-ness of experience is the brief definition I will give for today's talk. It would take too much time to go into more details. But just to clarify a little more, the for-me-ness of experience refers to the fact that every experience, whether I identify as the personal owner of this experience or not, is given to me as my own, perspectively speaking, and not as somebody else's. It's an intrinsic and pre-reflective notion of experience. And in the literature, for-me-ness and minus are often conflated, but for the purpose of this paper, it was necessary to distinguish them. So I want to propose, in line with Marie Guillot, that mineness, simply put, is the understanding that an experience is mine. So it presupposes a certain degree of reflection and of recognizing myself as myself that for-me-ness does not. Mineness is therefore linked to a sense of personal ownership. Under normal, that is non-traumatic circumstances, personal and perspectival ownership concur. So if we have an experience, we will always have both of these together. But they can't be conflated. Personal ownership as minus requires an awareness of the experience, oneself, and the relationship between the two that perspectival ownership does not. So say I'm thinking of a zebra. I have personal ownership of this experience when I'm aware of the thought of myself and of the fact that it is indeed me who is having the thought of a zebra. And this is what can actually be impacted in trauma. And patients suffering from PTSD experience a loss of personal ownership. may experience a loss of personal ownership. Thought insertion and also auditory verbal hallucinations are a good example to illustrate this. So an individual who loses personal ownership may have the experience of thinking of a zebra, but they do not identify as the owner of that experience. The thought is experienced as alien. However, such a loss of personal ownership of the thought or the experience doesn't imply a loss of the minimal self. The individual still experience the thought as intruding into what they feel to be themselves, into their embodied being. In Gal's case, the abuse suffered at the hands of her parents led her to divide her burden onto several alter identities. And as I mentioned earlier, in her feeling of madness, she ceases to identify completely with these alter identities and with her rational identity. And yet also in this extreme case, the forminess of the experience is still intact. By not identifying with her subjectivity, Gal doesn't cease to exist as a subjective point of view. She's still experiencing. And even if that experience is one of feeling almost non-existent. And therefore, it's not Gal's subjectivity or her minimal self that collapses, but rather her personal ownership. Subsequently, I argue that Ataria is wrong to say that an individual can lose their ability to perceive the world from first-person perspective and thus cancel their minimal self. So every experience is for a subjectivity, and this subjectivity amounts to minimal selfhood. To briefly sum this up, the minimal self, according to Dan Zahavi, is understood in a basic and pre-reflective sense. It implies forminess, but not reflective mindness, which would presuppose personal ownership. As the subjectivity inhabiting the point of view of experience, it is intrinsic to experiential life. So what is impacted in trauma? I will come to the third part of my presentation. And I have already mentioned the fact that the minimal self is not threatened doesn't make pathologies of other dimensions of self less severe. And I propose that a multidimensional account of the self is needed in order to grasp what is at stake in trauma. Three dimensions seem to be most relevant in this context. The social dimension, the narrative dimension, and the temporal dimension. To begin with the social dimension, social accounts of selfhood see that the self is established in relation to others. And they argue that there is no self prior to social interaction. As Kuzilo, for example, writes, the self is indeed derived and developed. It emerges from our being with others and is co-constituted in a joint organizational process through interpersonal relations. I want to argue, on the other hand, that minimal selfhood is present prior to the development of a social self and serves as a basis for the latter. And as opposed to the minimal self, the thus established social self is vulnerable and it's subject to disturbances through, for example, traumatic events. Judith Herman notes that traumatic events call into question basic human relationships. They shatter the constitution of the self that is formed and sustained in relation to others. Interpersonally inflicted trauma is said to have the most severe impact on the social self because it shatters assumptions about human interaction, most notably about trust and safety. An account of self that acknowledges its social nature is better suited for a discussion of post-traumatic pathologies of the self than the notion of minimal selfhood alone. It allows, for example, to integrate disturbances in relational capacities that I mentioned earlier as a symptom of CPTSD into the discourse. Another important dimension that is emphasized by trauma research is the narrative one, that we see it in the name, assumes that the self is established through a narrative, which can be by the individual, but also by the society. Daniel Dennett, for example, argues that, I quote, "Each normal individual of this species, Homo sapiens, makes a self. Out of its brain, it spins a web of words and deeds. And like the other creatures, it doesn't have to know what it's doing. It just does it." Again, I want to argue that the narrative dimension of selfhood relies on the primacy of a minimal self. The individual affected by trauma can be unable to integrate the memory of the traumatic experience into their life's narrative. Benny writes, "The trauma, like a well-aimed bullet, makes a hole in the symbolic fabric of which the history of the subject is composed. As a consequence, personal ownership and a sense of diachronic unity, the sense of being a self through time, can be disrupted." Thus, the very experience of being a self with a past and a future is potentially unavailable to the traumatized individual. In the temporality proper to trauma, the time of the clock, time as traditionally conceived, gets split asunder. In trauma time, as we might call it, the past of trauma is not, in fact, already over and done with. The traumatic event defies temporality. It presents a rupture that cannot be made part of the narrative and can't be integrated. It is therefore not experienced as past, but often takes the form of flashbacks or nightmares that have the quality of immediacy that a present experience does. At the same time, it can obliterate the future from the individual's experience. I quote Hermann, "The past, like the future, becomes too painful to bear, for memory, like hope, brings back the yearning for all that has been lost." End quote. So the individual fails to establish a link between the past event, the present, and the future. And again, this is a disturbance that we couldn't account for on the level of minimal selfhood alone. Here it is the narrative self that is disrupted. Gal, for example, talks about her experiences in the present tense. Which brings me to the relevance of the minimal self. So we've seen that trauma can have a significant impact on the self, conceived of in multidimensional terms. But the minimal self doesn't lose significance. It still enjoys conditional primacy to these other dimensions of selfhood. It precedes the narratively and socially constructed aspects. Because in order for these other dimensions to be established, subjectivity needs to be present. There needs to be an experiencing. Therefore, both narrative and social dimensions rely on this basic entity that is experiencing. Furthermore, the fact that the experience is for me and not for you, or for you, or for you, has great significance because it allows for the self-other differentiation already on the level, on the pre-reflective level. Also, terminologically, it makes sense to speak of a self rather than a mere subjectivity, because the self is an essential part of our experiential life as well as the discourse surrounding it. You also mentioned that we speak of the I see, I do. And lastly, there are the moral implications. the minimal self justifies to speak of a self even in severe psychopathologies, we can thus avoid denying the affected individual their selfhood and ultimately their humanity. Thank you.